life and read some of his writings. We can understand our immense debt. He was a great national So we're going to chant the Pranam Mantra for Bhakti Yoga Thakur, which is up on the board. My respectful obeisance is unto Sat Chidananda Bhakti Vinod, who is a transcendental energy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is a strict follower of the Goswamis, headed by Sri Rupa. And say after me, I offer my respectful obeisances
unto
Sat Chidananda Bhakti Vinod,
who is transcendental energy
of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Okay.
He is a strict follower of Goswamis. Headed by Sri Rupa. I was talking about last night to Shukavaka, a friend in Vietnam. He told me he was getting a class today there on Bhakti Vinod Thakur. He's currently writing a doctoral dissertation on Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And he's just been spending the last month in Toronto reading his Bengali autobiography, which is a very good book. So he's a real expert, but we'll have to do something here. Anyway, glorification of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared on September 2nd in 1838, on Sunday. In Nadia, the village in Nadia, and the family he was born in was a Vaishnava family. Only some of them were Vaishnavas, but that is from his father's side, but in his mother's side, there was no respect for Vaishnavism whatsoever. And actually he was raised on his maternal side. And so his whole family were Shaktas. They were devoted to Kali or Durga. And for that reason, for the future be called Daitya Kubera Kalad, Kalad of the family of Venus, because of the hostility of his mother's family. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a very interesting person. Appeared in 1838, left this world in 1914. And he is the one that we have to look to for the reestablishment of Lord Chaitanya's mission in modern times. Lord Chaitanya in the civil succession had all but disappeared. And it was when Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his 20s decided he wanted to, he heard about Lord Chaitanya, he decided he wanted a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita. He couldn't find it. It took a number of years before he was finally, this is in Bengal. It actually took a number of years before somebody finally found a copy, an old copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita for him in Calcutta. So it was Lord Chaitanya's movement had really fallen on hard times. And if you read that there was a production about the same time, that's still a standard reference work almost, called Hastings Encyclopedia of Religion and Ethics. You can still find it in all the university libraries. And it was a production of the late 19th century. And if you look up under Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you'll find that the chief notice of him is that he introduced a degenerate element into Vaishnavism, namely an erotic element. And that was his observation about considering what considering the character of those people who considered themselves to be followers of Lord Chaitanya. They were the Pratita Sahajiyas and folks of that sort. So this was the way things were going in those days. So it was very, very, not very good. So, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself, what he did was manage to sit through all the garbage and the things that were going on, all the different sorts of sects, the Bhavals, the Owls, the Vrindanagaris, the Pratita Sahajiyas, all the different kinds of illegitimate groups. He was able to discriminate between those who were actually following Lord Chaitanya and those who were not, locate, find the actual pure followers of Lord Chaitanya. And these he found a group of vairagis or renunciates who were living in some in Jagannath Puri, later in Vrindavan and Navadvip. They were small groups of vairagis or babajis, extreme renunciates, who were practicing the religion of Lord Chaitanya, the movement of Lord Chaitanya, as very strict Mahabharatas. They were all Mahabharatas, and as a consequence, they were not preaching. They were very strictly following, but it is not the general propensity of Mahabharata to preach. But in these Babajis, he had found the pure teaching of Lord Chaitanya, unadulterated, and he associated with them. Even though he was a householder, and not only a householder, but a person immersed in worldly affairs, he was raised in brought up in the Shakta family, and he received an English education. He was practically raised almost as a Westerner, because early on he became, because of his education, he became exposed to the leading thinkers of the time in America, Emerson, in Europe, Kant, Schelling, the human idealists, John Stuart Mill, Channing, Newman, all the great figures of 19th century thought. You became very well acquainted with them and their philosophies. And there was at that time in India a resurgence of Indian nationalism, and at the same time the impact of British British thought, and cultural impact was very, very great. And you had people like Ram Mohan Roy who tried to reorganize religion as a kind of Indian Unitarianism and things like that were going on. There were all kinds of different experiments were being attempted to try to revitalize Indian thought or Indian Vedic cultural heritage, but at the same time make it conform somehow relative to the standards that were being set by the West. So among those people like that, there was Dayananda Saraswati, Ram Mohan Roy, various movements, Arya Samaj, Brahma Samaj, these things were going. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, historically, was within that group of people. But what he did was rediscover and revitalize the mission of Lord Chaitanya.
So he came when he found Chaitanya Charitamrita and began to seek out the pure devotees of Lord Chaitanya. He was already an established civil servant. He was a magistrate for the government, which was British government. He was was belonged to that class of highly educated intellectual knowledge who had been exposed to Western ideas. And in one way, he knew his new Western. He received was more educated in the West than he was in his own native culture. In other words, he was very much like we are. And he, in his 30s, he became a convert to go to Vaishnavism. And he is a bridge, because what he did was take that pure Krishna consciousness as preserved and maintained by these very renounced, ascetic, unworldly Babaji's, and bring it into the marketplace of the 20th century. He began to write in English. He was the first Vaishnava Acharya to write in English. And he saw that the English language was the medium through which Gaudiya Vaishnavism was going to have to be spread all over the world. He was a person who didn't just see India anymore. He saw that what was developing through the impact of the modern world was a interconnected world civilization, and that Krishna consciousness would have to make its way in that in those circumstances. So he found Krishna consciousness among these renunciates, these vairagis, and he prepared it for the 20th century. That was his incredible achievement. So certainly he was sent by Krishna to do this, and he was given everything he needed to do this in the form of his education, his attainment, his culture, his discovery of the pure disciples of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and his labor, and also in his begetting a son, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who put his ideas into practice. Bhakti Vinod Thakur is the architect of the modern Krishna consciousness movement. He is the architect of this one. These are all his ideas. His idea of an international society for Krishna consciousness is the idea of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So, I have a few things to read to give you an idea of the quality of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. I thought I would read a few of his incidents from his life that are Feats.
He used to sit erect in front of the burning fire and rock back and forth, leaning himself into the fire and then again sitting erect. This is his austerity. He would also manifest fire from his head. He had two companions named Brahma and Shiva, and he declared that he was God himself who had come down to earth in the form of Mahavishnu. All the small kings of Orissa bowed down before his feet and would regularly send him money to build himself a temple. They would also send him women for his Rasa Lila dances. Bishop Krishna declared, "I will drive away the British administration and sit on the throne as king of Orissa myself."
That was political too.
He sent a circular to all places in Orissa and Manipur. The British government thought that he was plotting a political revolution against the government, so the district governor under the national government of Bengal sent out orders to arrest the offender. He had waged war against Queen Victoria, and therefore he should be prosecuted and tried in open court. But who dared to prosecute? No one had the courage to touch him and take him to the court in Jagannath Puri. The Orissa division was then under the charge of Mr. Ravenshaw, a district commissioner from England. Mr. Ravenshaw knew and believed in the power of Thakur Bhaktivinoda, who was then the deputy magistrate of Puri. He especially requested and gave in charge of the prosecution of this bogus Mahavishnu. On the other hand, Bhaktivinoda could not get a single man to come and touch him. They were all terrified of his heavenly power, so the Thakur went personally to arrest him. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wanted to find out what the nature of his power was. He knew that it was the power of the mundane world, so he was not in the least afraid. When Bhaktivinoda approached the yogi to arrest him, Mr. Krishna showed him some of his supernatural powers and said to Bhaktivinoda, "Ah, you are Kedaranatha, and you have come to inquire about me at my activities." Kedaranatha was his given name. "But I warn you not to disturb my actions, for I am the Supreme Lord himself." Bhaktivinoda then replied, "My dear sir, you are a great yogi. Why are you living here? You should come with me to Jagannath Puri, where you can have the darshan of Lord Jagannath." To this, Bishop Krishna angrily replied, "Why should I come to see Jagannath? He is only a hunk of painted wood, whereas I am the Supreme Lord personally." You can understand. At this state, the Bhaktivinoda came like burning fire and immediately physically arrested the robe who had to submit to the mighty godly power of Thakur Bhaktivinoda. He brought Bishop Krishna to Puri and threw him into jail. For protection, Bhaktivinoda put 36 Muslim constables and 72 police from Cuttack in charge of guarding the cell day and night. Bhaktivinoda then went out to find the assumed Brahma and Shiva, but these two rascals denied their positions and said it was only done in agreement with the orders of Bishop Krishna. Later on, they were also prosecuted by one Mr. Taylor, who was the subdivision officer at Kodar. Bishop Krishna was tried by Thakur Bhaktivinoda in his court in Puri. The trial continued for 8 days, and daily thousands of people would gather in the courtyard of the court while the trial was going on and make loud demands for the release of Bishop Krishna, and they had a follow-up. On the 6th day of the trial, Bhaktivinoda's second daughter, the 7-year-old Kandambini, became seriously ill, almost to the point of death. Many doctors attending Bhaktivinoda's house all through the night, attended Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house all through the night, and in the morning at about 8, she was well and lay in the yard. Bhaktivinoda could understand that this was an exhibition of the mundane mysticism of the demon Bishop Krishna upon his daughter to make him afraid of the yogi. Thakur Bhaktivinoda was undaunted and said, "Yes, let us all die, but this rascal must be punished." That day, Bishop Krishna had expressed in the open court that he had shown his power and he would display much more power, and Bhaktivinoda should be afraid of his power and should release him at once from jail. On the last day of the trial, the Thakur fell very ill with a high fever and suffered severely as his daughter did. For the whole night he was awake, and in the morning with great difficulty he was carried to the courthouse. Upon beginning trial, he declared his final judgment that Bishop Krishna should be thrown into jail for 18 months under strict imprisonment for political conspiracy. While Bishop Krishna was being removed from the court, Dr. Walter, the district medical officer, jumped on Bishop Krishna from behind and with a large pair of scissors cut off all his long hair, upon which Bishop Krishna's power depended. Bishop Krishna had not taken food or a drop of water during the 18 days of the trial, so as soon as his hair was removed, he fell to the ground like a dead man, without any power in his body, not even enough to walk.
stretcher to the jail. After 3 months, he was moved to the central jail of Mithapur, where he took poison and died in the year 1873. By this pastime, Thakur Bhaktivinoda, the energy of Lord Chaitanya, proved that any earthly aggrandizement or power cannot stand before the godly divine power of the pure devotee of the Lord. So that's one story. This is the story of Charanadas Babaji. Charanadas Babaji was printing bogus books and preaching among the common people of Bengal doctrines which were not in accordance with the teaching of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He preached that one should chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in Japa and Nitai Gaur Radhe Shyam Hare Krishna Hare Ram Kirtan. You still hear that occasionally. In this way, he murdered the Maha Mantra. It took a very long time for Thakur Bhaktivinoda to bring Charanadas Babaji to his senses. When that Charanadas finally came to understand his own mistake, he fell at the lotus feet of Thakur Bhaktivinoda and said, "How could it be possible for me to rectify all the wrongs which I have done? I have gone to every village in Bengal and have gotten entire villages to chant this nonsense mantra." I feel there is no hope for me. 6 months later, he became crazy and mad and finally died in great distress. In 1874, 80,000 rupees from the Jagannath temple had been misappropriated by the Raj of Puri for his own enjoyment. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the administrator of that temple. Thakur Bhaktivinoda found out about this nonsense and forced the Raj to give Lord Jagannath Bhoga Prasad 52 times a day. He could force him because he was the British Majesty. Because of this, the Raj's money was soon diminished to nothing, and he was extremely angry at this action that Bhaktivinoda took on him. He wanted to kill the Thakur, but he saw that it was not possible to kill him by ordinary means. Intent on killing Bhaktivinoda by some means, the Raj then began to perform a fire yajna with 50 learned pundits. The yajna was being performed in the inner compartment of his palace so that the public so that the public did not find out about this attempt on the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It was secret. Still, every day information was coming to Bhaktivinoda about the measures that the Raj was taking to kill him. After 30 days of yajna, when the last oblation of ghee was being poured on the fire, Thakur Bhaktivinoda was to have died at that moment. But instead, the Raj's dear and only son died within the palace when the last oblation had been offered. This is all before Bhaktivinoda Thakur, by the way, had accepted formal initiation. He didn't get initiated until it was in his early 40s. And there's a lot to say. The discovery of Sri Dhammayapur. While stationed at Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he found himself stationed in Nadia, the Lord Chaitanya's birthplace. He had to work very hard to do that. While stationed at Krishnanagar, Thakur Bhaktivinoda would go again and again to the present day city of Navadvip and search in various places for the birth site of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There was a plate being advertised as such, but he wasn't convinced it was there. One time, at the dead of night, Bhaktivinoda sat on the roof of the Rani Dhammashala in Navadvip, chanting the holy name on his beads. And as he looked out toward the north, he spotted a very tall talit tree with some very strange substance attached to it. Near the tree was a small building which gave off a very remarkable effulgence. Seeing this vision, the Thakur became extremely eager to find the true place of Mahaprabhu's appearance. With this in mind, he went to the Krishnanagar collectory, where he began to study some very old manuscripts of Chaitanya Bhagavat, Narahari Sankara's Thakur's Navadvip Dham Parikrama. well as some old maps of the district of Nadia. Going through the village of Balalatihi and inquiring from many of the elderly people there, Bhakti Vinod came to know many facts about the modern-day town of Navadvip and the old Navadvip on the eastern bank of the Bhagirathi River. The Ganges there is sometimes called the Bhagirathi. The difficulty is that every year it floods, and when it goes back, it's changed course. So things that were on the left bank end up on the right bank. It's very confusing. So that's why the original site had become lost. After this, through much research and endeavor, Thakur Bhakti Vinod was able to understand that the place he had seen that night on the roof of the Dharamshala was the actual site of Sri Chaitanya's birth. The year was 1887, and this discovery was a shining landmark in the history of Vaishnavism in India. Thakur Bhakti Vinod had brought to life the divine place of Chaitanya's birth, and his discovery was confirmed by Jagannath Das Babaji, the then religious head of the Gaudiya Vaishnava community in Nadia. On that eventful day, thousands of visitors were present at the spot where a grand Vaishnava festival was held. The result of this discovery was the production of a book by Bhakti Vinod entitled Navadvipa Mahatmya. So, of course, while he had government service, Bhakti Vinod Thakur used to wrote many, many books. He had an amazing schedule, which practically left him no time to sleep at all, rising at 1 o'clock in the morning and writing. He became very, very efficient at his job. He used to be able to hear cases and dispose of them very, very quickly. Never had a case overturned. So it was great. And then he spent his time writing and chanting. I want to get to he did this Namhatra work, established centers in various villages all around. In 1896, Thakur Bhakti Vinod, in a pioneering spirit, sent the teachings of Sri Chaitanya beyond the tiny borders of India to the west in the form of a small booklet he had written in Sanskrit titled Sri Gauranga Lila Smaranamanga Sutta. It had a Sanskrit commentary by a renowned pundit of Nadia, Shiktikanta Vasa, and for English knowing people. The book contained an introduction in English called Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, His Life and Precepts. This booklet found its way into the library of McGill College in Canada, the library of the Royal Asiatic Society of London, and a few other highly respectable institutions. The following remarks appeared in the Journal of the Royal Asiatic Society of London. Under the title of Sri Gauranga Lila Smaranamangala Stotram, the well-known Vaishnava Sri Kendaranath Bhakti Vinod, M.R.A.S., member of the Royal Asiatic Society, has published a poem in Sanskrit on the life and teaching of Chaitanya. It is accompanied with a commentary, also in Sanskrit, in which the subject further elucidated is preceded by an introduction of 62 pages in English in which the doctrines taught by Chaitanya are set out in somewhat full detail. This position, and more especially as against Shankara and the Advaita Vedantism, is explained at length. The little volume will aid to our knowledge of this remarkable reformer, and we express our thanks to Bhakti Vinod for giving it to us in English and Sanskrit rather than in Bengali, in which languages must necessarily have remained a closed book to European students of the religious life of India. Thakur's Life and Precepts of Chaitanya, though in itself a small work, continued to be admired by Western thinkers and writers. And then he has a review of it. That's quoted here by the scholar R.W. Fraser of the Madras Civil Service. He says, I'll read a few excerpts. 500 years have passed away since the time Chaitanya spread a faith in the saving grace of Krishna throughout the land. Nevertheless, down to the present day, the same spirit that inspired Chaitanya continues still to dwell among his followers. In an interesting account of the life and precepts of Chaitanya, lately published by his devout and aged follower, Sri Kendaranath Datta Bhakti Vinod, it can be read how this spirit preserves its vitality undiminished amid the changes that are sweeping over the land. This exponent of our hopes for the present followers of the teachers of Chaitanya declares his firm faith that from a devoted love to Krishna, a love like that of a girl for a loved one, shown by constant repetition of his name, by ecstatic raptures, singing, calm contemplation and fervor, a movement which will yet take place to draw to the future church of the world. Quote, now he quotes from this book. All classes of men without distinction of caste or clan to the highest cultivation of the spirit. This church, it appears, will extend all over the world. This is Bhakti Notan, right? And take, this is in, what is it? What did I say? 1896. This is his prediction. This church, it appears, will extend all over the world and take the place of all sectarian churches which exclude outsiders from the precincts of the mosque, church, or temple. Well, I wanted to read first of all, a sample of his English preaching from that book. His life, the life part, is reprinted in the introduction Teaching to Lord Chaitanya? What is the introduction to? No, but also the Bhakti on top of this introduction, I think it's Teaching to Lord Chaitanya. This is from his precepts. He outlines the principal doctrines of Lord Chaitanya. So I'll just read the first. The first doctrine is Hari, the Almighty, is one without a second. So this is how Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains this. Hari, the Supreme Being, is one without a second. In Aryan theology, the creative principle of the deity is personified in Brahma and the destructive principle in Shiva. Indra is the head of some lower elements of administration. Hence, they are not the Almighty himself, but are different representations of different attributes. They have obtained their powers from an original fountainhead. Hence, they are subordinate beings in the service of Hari or Bhagavan. Then again, there are three distinct philosophical ideas of the deity, i.e., one, the idea of the negative Brahman of the pantheistic school, two, the idea of the universal soul, Paramatma, of the yoga school, and three, the idea of a personal deity with all his majesty, might, glory, beauty, wisdom, and supremacy combined in the person. The ideas of Brahma and Paramatma are therefore included in the idea of Bhagavan. Spiritually, therefore, Bhagavan is Hari, the Supreme Being. Human ideas are either mental or spiritual. The mental idea is defective, and it has relation to the creative principle of matter. The spiritual idea is certainly the nearest approach to the Supreme Being. Then again, the spiritual idea of Bhagavan is of two sorts. In one sort, the person of the deity is overpowered by his own majesty, and in the other, the personal beauty overpowers all his majesty. The first idea is represented in the great Narayan of Vaikuntha, who is Lord of Lords and God of Gods. The second is represented in the all-beautiful Krishna with Radhika, the representative of the Zladini, or superior ecstatic energy. Krishna appears as a man among men, and is again generally accepted as God above gods. Krishna attracts, loves, and produces ecstasy in all souls. His person and personal attachments are all purely spiritual and have no relation to the material world. The material senses of man cannot approach him. It is the spirit in man which can see him direct and commune with him. The soul, fettered in matter, has from its own degradation lost its right to see Krishna and his spiritual lila in the spiritual world, but Krishna, out of his own supreme power and prerogative, may appear with all his Vrindavan lila before the eyes of all men. The rational man can hardly conceive and believe Krishna and his lila. As his spiritual essence improves, he sees him and loves him with all his heart. In our small compass, we can hardly treat this subject fully and exhaustively. We therefore leave this point to our readers with these words. Give up the shackles of matter slowly. Cultivate your spirit inwards. Give up prejudice which you have acquired from the so-called rational thinkers who deny the existence of spirit. Be humble in yourself and learn to respect those who work toward spiritual attainments. Do these with your heart, mind, and strength in the company of spiritual people alone, and you will see Krishna in no time. Krishna is not an imaginary being, nor do you have a right to think that he is a material phenomenon fancied to be the supreme being by the fools. Krishna is not understood by the process of distinguishing the subjective from the objective, that is the Mayavadi's process. Nor is he to be accepted as an imposition on the people set up by designing men. Krishna is eternal, spiritually true, reflected on the human soul when relieved of all pressure of gross matter, and is the subject of love which proceeds from the soul. Accept him as such, and you will see him in your soul's eye. Words fail to describe that transcendental being. The highest, best, and most spiritual idea of the divinity is in Krishna. To bring arguments against him is simply to deceive oneself and deprive him of the blessings that God has kept in store for man. Hence, all descriptions of his name, person, attributes, and lila should be accepted spiritually, giving up the material portion which words must necessarily convey. Now, I want to... That is kind of public preaching. Now here's some... I want to read some of his... he wrote many, many, many songs in Bengali verse. In which he expresses his very, sometimes very intimate feelings. So I wanted to read the English in some of these so you can get a more intimate picture of him and also his teachings. First, there's some songs which are about renunciation of conduct adverse to pure devotion. This is from his book, Sharanagati. He sings, "This material creation of yours, O Keshava, is most strange. I have roamed throughout the forest of this universe in consequence of my selfish acts, and I have beheld many strange and curious sights. Forgetfulness of your lotus feet has brought on anguish and grief. As I burn in this fire of misery, my would-be saviors, Kapila, Gautama, Kanata, Jaimini, and Buddha, come running to my aid. Each expounds his particular view, dangling various pleasures, and liberation is baked in their philosophical traps." These are people of the atheists and people of these various philosophical systems. "They are all cheaters, averse to your devotional service, and thus fatally dangerous. They are the magnates of karma, jnana, and yoga, who specialize in opinions and proofs for cheating the materially inclined. Bhakti Vinod, considering refuge at the feet of the Vaishnavas as essential, pays his respects to these cheating philosophers from afar. I vow to abandon without compromise all actions contrary to your devotional service. I will keep company with no one opposed to devotional service, nor even look at the face of a person inimical to the Lord Gauranga. I shall never reside in a place unfavorable for devotional practices, and may I never take pleasure in non-devotional works. I will read no book opposed to pure devotion, nor listen to any explanation which disagrees with pure devotional principles. I will never regard as sacred any place where Lord Gauranga is rejected. Any knowledge hindering pure devotional service I consider worthless. Any season which poses obstacles to the execution of devotional service shall find no favor with me, and I will consider all relatives or family members averse to pure devotion as strangers. I will abandon all desires that hinder devotion and never accept food offered to me by non-devoting atheists. I vow to completely shun whatever I know to contradict pure devotion. This I strongly promise. Bhaktivinoda, falling at the feet of the Lord, begs for the strength to give up all obstacles to pure devotion. Both the monist philosophers and those bewildered by worldly affairs live in vain, for both are devoid of devotion to you. I pray I shall know this feel, Lord, that I may be spared the company of them both. Yet of the two, the worldly man is better. I ask never to have the company of a Mahayana. When the worldly man enters into the company of saintly persons, within his heart he becomes inspired by pure devotion through the mercy of those devotees. But woe to him who has known the offensive presence of impersonalist philosophy. Such sophistry makes the heart as hard as an thunderbolt. The Mayavada philosopher declares that the true form of bhakti, its object Sri Krishna, its possessor, the devotee, are all transitory and thus illusory. Be on this pretense of service to Krishna, of hearing and chanting his glories. His so-called prayers strike the body of Krishna with blows more cruel than a thunderbolt. Because of the practice of Mayavada, sometimes you adapt devotional service to practice while actually not believing it.
Deity worship?
Yeah, deity worship, and they'll chant Hare Krishna, so on. Okay. He says his prayers strike the body of Krishna like blows of a thunderbolt. There is no philosophy as antagonistic to devotional service as the Mayavada philosophy. Therefore, I do not desire an association of the Mayavada. Bhaktivinoda drives away the philosophy of illusionism and sits safely in the society of Vaishnavas under the shelter of the holy name. Now, some prayers in acceptance of activities favorable to pure devotion, or rejection, now as acceptance. I will surely execute with utmost care those activities favorable to your pure devotional service. I will feel fondness for those things in this world which are conducive to pure devotion, and with my senses I will engage them in your service. I will carefully listen to all discussions concerning you, and the satisfaction of my eye will be to behold your divine abode. I will nourish my body with the sacred remnants of your food, and smell the sweet scent of tulsi leaves adorning those offerings. With my hands I will always execute your service, and I will forever dwell at that place where you abide. I will employ my desires in your devotional service and show anger to those who are envious of you. In this way, may all of my propensities and emotions obtain dignity and glory by being favorable to you. I will consider as favorable to your devotional service anything I do which is favorable to your devotee. Bhaktivinoda knows neither religion nor irreligion. He simply prays that all his activities be conducive for pure devotion to you. On the banks of the celestial Ganges River, I will dwell in a cottage at Suradi Kunj in Godruma Town. That's his house. This land of Godruma is very conducive to performing devotional worship of the Supreme Lord and is not different from the sacred place called Nandagram, located in the holy district of Mathura. I will put on a garb that is dear to the devotees of Lord Gaurasundara and wear 12 Vaishnava tilak markings on my body and beautiful beads of tulsi wood around my neck. Then by planting flowering trees like Kampaka, Bakula, Kadamba, and Kamal, I will make an extensive grove by my cottage. I will put Madhavi and Malati creeper on the trees, and in this way make a shady bower. I will sow a variety of flowering forests and different kinds of jasmine like Yuti, Jati, and Mali. All these will be present there, arrayed in a charming fashion. I will install the Empress, Tulsi, on an elevated throne on the terrace, and then procure all necessary paraphernalia for having kirtan, such as madanga drum, kartals, and gongs, and place them there. Then I will sing the holy name in the company of the Vaishnavas. All glory.
glories to go through. All glories to the divine abode of Lord Varanga. Bhakti Vinod is favorably disposed to pure devotion. All glories to the blossoming Surabhi Kunj and the banks of the celestial Ganges. The next song we sing a lot. Shuddha Bhakta Charana Bhajana Shuddha Bhakta Seva Paramasiddhi Primasati Karamula. My mind always begs for the opportunity to hear the music of the Mridanga. Upon hearing the kind of kirtan ordained by Lord Gauranga, Gaurachandra, my heart dances in ecstasy. Beholding the deity forms of the divine couple Sri Sri Radha Krishna, I feel the greatest joy. By honoring the Lord's prasad, I conquer over all worldly illusions. Goloka Vrindavan appears in my home whenever I see the worship and service of Lord Hari taking place there. When I see the Ganges, that river of nectar emanating from the lotus feet of the Lord, my happiness knows no bounds. The sight of the holy Tulsi tree soothes my soul, for I know she gives pleasure to Lord Krishna. By honoring Shak, the green leaf vegetable preparation, a great favorite of Lord Chaitanya, I consider life worthwhile. Whatever Bhakti Vinod obtains that is conducive for the service of Sri Krishna, he accepts every day with the greatest joy. Another thing I want to read, he has another Gitavali, another book of songs. He has eight prayers based on the Shishastika instructions of Lord Chaitanya. And the third one, one should chant the holy name in a humble state of mind, giving oneself more power to the tree. Ready to offer all respects to others, giving oneself lower than the straw in the street. And that state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. So these are his verses based on that, and they constitute a very nice purport to that. Of course, there's purports to all eight, but I'll just have time and I'll read this one. So this is his song. If your mind is always absorbed with great care in chanting the glories of Sri Krishna, then in that process of Krishna kirtan, you will gain mastery over the mind. You should give up all false pride and always consider yourself as worthless, destitute, lower, and more humble than a blade of grass. You should practice forgiveness like that of a tree. And giving up violence toward other living beings, you should protect and maintain them. In the course of your life, you should never give anxiety to others, but rather do good to them and forget about your own happiness. When one has thus become a brave and pious soul because of possessing all good qualities, one should abandon all desires for fame and honor and make one's heart humble. Always knowing that Lord Krishna resides with all living creatures, one should, with great respect, show honor to all living beings at all times. Humility, mercifulness, respect toward others, and the renunciation of desires for fame and honor. One becomes virtuous by possessing these four qualities. In such a state, you should sing the glories of the Supreme Lord. Weeping, Bhakti Vinod submits his prayer at the lotus feet of the Lord. O Lord, when will you give me possession of such qualities as these? Then there's another want to read another one. This song from Sharanagati expresses Bhaktivinoda Thakur expresses his confidential spiritual service as a rasa of Madhurya as a saki. This is his service in his
spiritual form to Krishna. So he prays to Krishna like this. Gone is the vanity of male egoism, O Kana. Now I am your faithful maidservant. O Lord of Radha, in the groves of Braja, I will perform devotional service as a follower of one of the Sakis. The Sakis are the Dhamarani's maidservants, assistants. I will string together a necklace of forest flowers, and Tulsi buds shall be the jewels of that necklace. With utmost care, I will place the garland in the hands of that confidential devotee, and she will take it with affection. Then she will place the garland around both your necks, while I watch in wonder from afar. The confidant will then say to me, "Listen, O beautiful one, you should remain in this grove as my attendant. Daily we shall string together beautiful flower garlands that will enchant Radha and Krishna. The responsibility for your maintenance shall be mine. My cottage in the grove is yours. When I serve Radha and Madhava, you will attend behind me. After preparing tambur, that's a lady, and bringing camphor, you will give them to me, knowing me to be yours." Bhakti Vinod, having heard all these instructions, bows down at the lotus feet of that confidential sakhi. I'll stop there. It's an immense amount of wonderful material. It's always wonderful as what I've read. This is a very nice picture of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. You can look, this book has some nice pictures of him at various times in his life. Are any questions?
Yeah. Who do we accept Bhakti Vinod Thakur as?
Well, as he says in this poem, he's one of the Sakis or assistants to the Sakis. There's a number of songs like that, and very, very wonderful, also very, very advanced.
It was published, the introduction of that Gaurav Mangala, whatever it is, was published in a separate book, and that's what that
is. This is a separate book from that. That structure of the Sanskrit commentary and this book was sent out to McGill University.
Oh, the Sanskrit also?
Yeah, the Sanskrit was a complete book of it. It's a Mangala structure, similar to that.
That's one of the books Krishna Prabhupada translated, that Gaurav Mangala.
And this is in English, which is separately published. This is a 1946 Gaudiya Math. She's spending half of his life in success. I just want to read a little bit of how he preached to the West.
He seems easy to understand about his time.
Yes, he is easy to understand. Well, he has his places where it gets a little But he was learned in the really, I ran across something in here that really made me appreciate it. Something I'd also realized about Western philosophers, and he picked up on it. I can find it. I lost the place. Let me just read a little more about the scope of reason. Then he ends with a comment, a very, very deceptive comment about Western philosophy. He says, "One who studies the name, forms, attributes in the Leela of Krishna, as described in Srimad Bhagavatam, with a sincere heart, mind, and strength, in the company of one who has realized the spirit, is expected to know it by the influence of bhakti. One who is apt to rationalize everything closely does scarcely acquire the truth in matters of spirits, as by law of God, reason in its present state can never reach the sphere of spirit. It is needless to go further on the subject. Those who will have the opportunity to go as far as we have stated will make a further inquiry from their hearts, and the all-beautiful Lord will then help them to realize the Spirit and to rise higher and higher in its realm. But as long as the mind is confounded with Spirit and is confused with, mistaken for, there is no way to rise beyond matter and its relations. The great mistake that most of the Western philosophers have generally made is to identify the mind, the perverted ego, ahankar, with the soul, the Spirit. We are sorry for that. That is really right on. That's a big, very perceptive. Anyone else?
He's over the part that you spoke about. We're discussing the acceptance of pure devotional self-principle by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You mentioned that you won't accept any devotees prepared by non-devotees, pure devotional principle. So ourselves, sometimes we do that, like we bless the butter or cheese, and we offer it to the deities. Now, when it is offered to the deities like this, is it all, I suppose, everything is taken away, all the information is taken away from it?
Depends. Depends on whether you offer these things because you have no choice, or whether you offer these things because you're lazy. If we could acquire butter, for example, that was made purely by devotees, then that would be better to offer, since we cannot. So, same thing. If, say, for example, you're traveling, and there's nothing else to eat, but things that are to some extent prepared by the devotees, then you offer that, and that's okay. But if you have a choice to be prasadam, then still you choose to try to offer something else.
No, when a devotee supposedly travel and he offers some food stuff that is prepared by non-devotees, is he accepting that because he's preaching, traveling, he has no choice, accepting the consequences of his effort?
No, there won't be bad consequences if it's done out of there's no difficulty. But if you use that principle of chi, then you'll especially in that spirit, you need to eat grains of it for the devotees, you become lusty.
This reference to the answer that people have probably explains that anything prepared by the devotee creates that lust. There's a danger.
So if there's nothing else to do, and because Prabhupada would also do that sometimes when preaching in English, life in his house. So for the sake of preaching, you may take a risk not to enjoy something palatable, but you take that risk. But if it's done because of the line of preaching, then we can expect protection of Krishna. But you have to be very careful. Any other questions?
No.
No announcements?
So today we're fasting. So the last Rishab, the Bhakti and Bhakti. And also we're going to continue our Gurukul discussion at 9:30 this morning.
Okay, we still have Bhagavad Gita class also.
Well,
I just won't be here. And I don't give most people. I'm not canceling the class, that's all.
Well, what we just meet at 9:30, I think that
yeah, I don't think it's going to be a good class at all, so it's important to say.
This is my only good class. Thank you.